This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 6th December 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 5th of December 2019, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Appeal as Cancer Charity Hits Crisis, Centre caught up in National Citizenship Scheme financial row, and support for hospice grows. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Right, appeal as cancer charity hits crisis. A cancer charity, which has been supporting people for nearly 40 years, has issued an emergency appeal to raise £600,000 or face a bleak future. Time and money could be running out for Wessex Cancer Trust, with patients and their families looking at nowhere to turn. The self-funded charity, which provides free emotional and practical support to anyone living with cancer in Hampshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight, has launched a crisis appeal to raise £600,000 by January the 31st, 2020, or it risks having to close. Financial strains hit the service following a 30% increase in demand for its services this year. The charity usually receives around £450,000 a year from people who've left donation gifts in their will. But it has been hit by a 65% reduction in people doing this, while a decline in the high street saw sales fall in its seven charity shops by 15%. A large money gift was promised to the charity, but was delayed, and the charity fell into its first crisis. Conservative parliamentary candidate for Winchester and Chalmers Ford and former cancer minister Steve Brine is urging people to support the Cancer Support Service. Steve said, "There's a very real possibility that vital cancer support services for local people will be lost at the end of January. This is a devastating prospect. The recently published NHS long-term plan has a strong focus on diagnosis, meaning more and more people will be living with cancer and for longer. As these numbers continue to increase, so will the demand for Wessex Cancer Trust services. Being there for others is at the heart of everything Wessex Cancer Trust does. I'm urging everyone to come together to support the charity so that local families can continue to receive the best possible care throughout their cancer diagnosis, treatment and recovery." Wessex Cancer Trust helps around 11,000 people every year through its four support centres in Chandlers Ford, Bournemouth, Hythe and Isle of Wight. Fiona Roy from Hamble turned to the charity for counselling and family support. After being diagnosed with breast cancer in 2011 and receiving surgery and chemotherapy, Fiona was given the all clear. But in 2015, Fiona was told the cancer was back and had spread to her lungs. She said, "I felt fear, sadness and the loss of so many dreams. Training for London Marathon hurt some days, but not as much as having cancer hurts. I'm so very grateful to Wessex Cancer Trust for giving me the chance to live this dream. Over the years, their support has been vital to me and my family. They can't make us better, but they can definitely help us feel better. That, in the here and now, is worth so much." If the charity fails to raise the money, Chairman Barry Rinaldi said it would be heartbreaking. He said, since 1981, Wessex Cancer Trust has been there for local people at a particularly tough time in their lives. Being told you have cancer is devastating. Living with it can be incredibly lonely and affects all aspects of your life. We work tirelessly to give people a safe place to get support, regardless of age, gender, or type of cancer, away from a hospital environment. We do not receive any government funding and rely on voluntary donations and fundraising to run our services. One in two of us will get cancer, and an increasing number of us are living longer after a cancer diagnosis, meaning more and more people will need us in the future. Throughout 2019, we have worked hard to ensure we can continue to meet the growing and diverse needs of people living with cancer in future. We have recently launched a strategy which outlines how we will evolve services to care for every person in a way that best meets their individual needs. In the long term, this will enable us to help more people and improve our financial sustainability. But we've been struggling to stabilize our financial situation. This is not a Christmas appeal or a planned campaign. It is a last resort. We have never needed to run a crisis appeal before, but now urgently need to raise £600,000 by the 31st of January 2020. If we fail, we will not be there for the 165,000 people who will be facing a cancer diagnosis by 2030 and their loved ones.
Centre caught up in NCS financial row. The future of an outdoor centre near Winchester hangs in the balance after a charity involved in delivering a government scheme has gone into administration. Marwell Outdoor Activity Centre has been forced to make seven people redundant and has not been paid £40,000 for delivering the National Citizenship Scheme, the NCS. The family-run business, which has been going for 40 years, was due to be paid the sum in October, but last week the company were angered to find the Challenge, who owe the money, has appointed an administrator. The Challenge has been heavily involved in delivering NCS since it was launched by the government in 2010. For the last 3 years, Marwell Outdoor Activity Centre has been welcoming around 300 children a week in the summer to take part in the scheme. Owner Digby Cooper said, "We have lost out on £40,000. It has decimated us. We are a small family business. We are going to struggle. This is a major part of our survival. We are the small fish in this. We didn't think in a million years we'd be in this position." Following the announcement, Mr. Cooper has had discussions with NCS Chief Executive Michael Linas, who confirmed that the trust would not be paying. "I am staring into the abyss. I've pushed away schools and tens of thousands of other business. I did that, the scheme, for 3 years with them, and we've just been spat out at the end, not being paid, and told to go and fend for yourself." The centre is looking at a massive shortfall of hundreds of thousands of pounds for next year, with another organisation, Invasion, working with NCS pulling its reservation around the same time. "We were holding 1,000 beds right up to 2 weeks ago. They then pulled the rest of my provision, which I was holding for them. I can't fill 1,000 beds near December the 1st. All my beds are booked a year in advance. The business have not been given a reason as to why the reservation was cancelled." The Challenge entered administration following 5 months of talks with the NCS to resolve certain significant issues. Bill Rowland, the Challenge chairman, said, The decision to appoint an administrator was not taken lightly, but after every possible avenue had been exhausted. We made this difficult decision with great sadness and considerable anger at the manner in which the challenge has been forced into it. And an NCS spokesperson said, "We have a great deal of sympathy with Marwell Activity Centre for the position it's in. However, it needs to take the matter up with the appointed administrator of the challenge." And they added, "It would be inappropriate for NCS Trust to use further taxpayers' money to pay Marwell when that money has already, in effect, been paid."
Well, after two rather depressing stories about financial difficulties, this is rather more optimistic headline. Support for hospice grows. Now, it's quite a clever headline for the Hampshire Chronicle because it's about a garden. You see what they did? So, support for hospice grows. Right, future patients and family members spending time at Winchester Hospice will have a special place to reflect and spend time together thanks to a generous donation from Bible Society. It has been announced that the hospice will benefit from a special garden being created by multi-award-winning designer Sarah Ebeld for Bible Society's display at the Royal Hampshire Society Chelsea Flower Show. After being viewed at the event, the garden will be recreated at Winchester Hospice, where patients, their loved ones and staff will be able to enjoy it. The garden, based on Psalm 23, will provide a quiet space for reflection for those of all faiths and none. Maddie Thompson, clinical matron of palliative and end-of-life care at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which will run the Winchester Hospice, said, "The garden will represent a special place for our patients and their families, who can enjoy precious moments in this beautiful outdoor space. We're absolutely delighted that they will be able to offer this part of the care and support we provide and know that it will make a huge difference to the families being supported."
Next, we have the death announcements. Arnold, Doris Arnold, on the 23rd of November, aged 89. Baxter, Neil Baxter, on the 19th of November in St Catherine's View, Winchester. Chambers, Tony Chambers, at home on the 21st of November. Chapman, John David Chapman, at home on the 23rd of November, aged 84. Dix, Peter James Dix, in hospital on the 23rd of November, aged 88. Ede, Anthony Christopher Ede, aged 61, at James Paget Hospital on 10th of November. Herridge, Alice, known as Eleanor Herridge, at home on the 21st of November, aged 73. James, Sheila James, on the 29th of November at St Cross Grange Care Home. Knight, Roger 4 feet Knight, on the 16th of November, aged 87. Mundy, Paul Andrew Mundy, on the 24th of November, aged 59. Richards, Major General Nigel Richards, on the 21st of November, aged 74. Thomas William, known as Bill Thomas, on the 24th of November, at home. And Whiting, Joan Margaret Whiting, who died in Horncastle on the 21st of November, aged 95. And now we have Christian comment.
Waiting for God's promises. This Advent season, the Church waits in faith. We wait for God's promises to us to be fulfilled. We enter into the world of those before Christ who waited in faith for his coming. In these early weeks of Advent, one focus has traditionally been on waiting with the patriarchs. Some people think we should give that up. Patriarch is far from having a good name in contemporary society. You're most likely to see the word patriarchy followed by the word hashki smash the. Patriarchy is rightly opposed if it means an oppressive system of domination by older males in each family. But for Christians, as for Jews, the patriarchs are always remembered with the matriarchs. Their significance is that they were parents in families which received crucial promises from God and whose faith was central to God's fulfilling his promises. The most famous patriarchs and matriarchs were so central to God's purposes that they were seen as the heads of the whole Israelite nation. Abraham and Sarah, their son Isaac and his wife Rebekah, and their son Jacob, renamed Israel, whose 12 sons would lead the 12 tribes. What faith the elderly, childless Abraham and Sarah were asked to show when God promised that their descendants would be as numerous as the stars in the desert sky. What faith the proud father Abraham was asked to show when God seemed to be calling him to sacrifice the person dearest to him, his long-hoped-for son Isaac. Abraham does not model a faith which is without challenge or without sacrifice. He lays upon the altar the dearest and the best. With Sarah, he keeps the faith through times of darkness, when the light still shines and the darkness has not overcome it. The slow watches of the night belong no less to God. His light still shines in them, if we can only see it. Which of God's promises do you yearn to see fulfilled this Advent? Are you yearning for healing in your family? Are you seeking to relate the life of your household to the wider needs of the world? Are you yearning for some gift from God, but think the days are past when it could be given to you? Do you feel far from home and yearn for a new land? The patriarchs and matriarchs show us that we can and should trust God, that he will fulfill his promises in our lives through our faith in him and in the incarnation, death, and resurrection of his Son, Jesus. God, our Father, you called the patriarchs and matriarchs to live by the light of faith in the hope of your promised fulfillment. And you have set before us the great hope that your kingdom shall come on earth. Give us grace to discern the signs of its dawning and to work for the perfect day when your will shall be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen. And this is from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish in Winchester.
We now come to the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Normally we restrict the letters probably to about 8 or 10. This week we've had actually a bumper crop of letters, 21 actually in total. The first set of letters relate to the usual Winchester gripes about the three P's, parking, planning and potholes, but the remainder are to do with the general election. Now, we felt it would be a bit invidious for us to have made just a selection of the letters. So I'm afraid we're going to read all the letters that we have, 21 in total. So before you sit down for this pending marathon, maybe you'd like to go out and make yourself a cup of tea before you sit down, or depending on the time of day, maybe something a little bit stronger. So we'll start with the first letter. We start, as I say, with the ones relating to Winchester matters, and then the more political ones about the forthcoming general election will follow on after that.
This first letter is from Phil Gagg, and it's entitled "Well Done." Sir, the City Council is to be congratulated on its good management of the finances of off-street parking, Chronicle, November the 28th. The £4.7 million surplus gives the lie to all those who predicted that motorists would desert Winchester if parking charges were to be raised. The continuing congestion suggests there is scope for further increases in the charges. People happy to spend over £20,000 on new cars should not complain about paying a fair rate for the land their parked cars occupy. Parking costs are minimal compared with the other costs of running cars. The AA is wrong to say that councils see drivers as wallets on wheels. It would be more accurate to say councils see drivers, quite rightly, as polluters on wheels and a major health hazard. Councils must raise money from drivers so they can begin to address the myriad problems that drivers cause. Much needs to be done. The council has to raise money to implement the City of Winchester movement strategy in the form voted on in the consultation. The council needs every penny to tackle climate change, and the latest figures show how difficult this will be. Road transport CO2 emissions are 57% of all the emissions in the district, and rose 7% between 2013 and 2017. It'll rise even more if the M3 is widened. The previous Conservative administration in Winchester made an excellent start on tackling congestion and pollution problems, and the financial surplus is to their credit. The forthcoming revised parking strategy is an opportunity for the current Liberal Democrat administration to build on these foundations. To meet the challenges, all charges will have to be raised further, with the large subsidy for the park and ride operation reduced ideally to zero, and a private off-street parking surcharge introduced. Revenues raised could then be used to build good cycle and pedestrian networks, subsidise improved bus and train services, and develop better traffic control measure. With new legislation, the council could even help fund the NHS to treat the casualties of the road pollution. So writes Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from John Miller, and it's headed Antisocial. Sir, I'm sure I'm not alone in my alarm at your story of Hampshire County Council planning to close libraries. That's Chronicle, November 28th. My own wonderful local library in Ormsford is always full of keen readers of all ages. The staff are so helpful. If they don't have a particular book I need for research, they will order it from elsewhere in the country. More importantly, the library is much used by school children. The educational and cultural value of our public libraries is very special, and I urge your readers to lobby their councillors to reject this deeply antisocial proposal. That's from John Miller, Alsford Road, Bishop Sutton.
And this is a letter from Angela Seeley, headed Guard Removal. Sir, re the current train strike by Southwestern Rail. Many of us older citizens make frequent and enjoyable use of these trains. The key thing that enables us to feel safe and confident is the presence of the guard. If in future there are no guards on these trains, what will happen when someone is taken ill on a moving train? And what will happen if someone is confused and forgets to get off at their station? Who will help and advise them? Many of us are very worried indeed about the proposed removal of the guard and the apparent alternative of reliance on computer technology. How will that help us in the situations described above? At no point, as far as I'm aware, has the train company fully explained their plan to all of us who use their trains. Why not? And this is from Angela Seeley, Park Road, Winchester.
Jill Collymore writes about revival hope. Sir, I was saddened to see the article by Sam Hatherley in the Chronicle, November 14th, about the winding down of the OBCCC, the charity set up to replace St Mark's Church building in Oliver's Battery. To have that prefabricated Nissen hut-type building replaced by a good modern one, combining church and community centre, could be a huge asset to the area. I hope it is not too late to revive the charity, raise funds, choose a good architect and improve the environment in Oliver's Battery. That's from Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester.
John Andrews writes, ludicrous. Sir, it is now more than 3 years since Claire Lloyd-Jones commissioned to report an independent report on the Silver Hill fiasco made clear the inadequacies of our Winchester City Council. Yet precious little has been learned. As Judith Martin pointed out in her letter, Chronicle November 28th, to lose three judicial reviews within 5 years looks like an ill-advised council. Miss Lloyd-Jones was critical of both their elected councillors and the council officers who advised them. But the clear import of her report is that the future of our city is being directed not by the people not by the people we elect, but by officers unaccountable to the voters. As Miss Lloyd-Jones noted, it was Councillor Kim Gottlieb who had the initiative to initiate the judicial review on the Silver Hill project. It's the same Councillor Gottlieb who remains under investigation after Simon Eden, the former City Council Chief Executive, 3 years ago, accused him of bullying behaviour. Just what this alleged bullying means has not been revealed. Are officers snowflakes, unable to accept well-deserved criticism? Frankly, it beggars belief that Mr. Eden's successor and successive party leaders have not put an end to this farce. The delay, and indeed the charge itself, must obviously be painful for Councillor Gottlieb. For the rest of us, it smacks of a ludicrous and expensive vendetta. Written by John Andrews, Hyde Street, Winchester.
And this is a letter from P. Stewart, headed Objections. Sir, Dr. Tim Paget recommends readers of the Hampshire Chronicle to go onto the City Council planning website to look at his plans for 3 King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester, letters November 28th. I also recommend readers to look at the comments registered, particularly from those living in the Hyde area. There are over 130 registered objections to his proposals. There are a few supporting statements. The majority are from people who do not live in the Hyde area and will not have to live with the planning building. That's from P. Stewart, Saxon Road, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Destruction, is from John Lawaris, I think that's how you would pronounce his name. He's the chairman of ADD, which stands for Action Against Destructive Development. Sir, the leader of Eastleigh Borough Council, Keith House, must be getting desperate to judge by his wild and inaccurate attack on ADD in last week's Chronicle, November the 28th. Our opposition to the Eastleigh local plan has nothing to do with the development being, quotes, on our doorstep, quote, as he claims, since the vast majority of ADD's members do not live near the proposed site. We do object, however, to the wholesale and entirely avoidable destruction of fine countryside, the permanent damage to several areas of ancient woodland, the submerging of villages beneath urban sprawl, and a plan that would seriously impact the River Itchen, according to the world's leading expert on the subject. We very much support new housing, but not the sort currently on offer. Eastleigh's proposals would create executive estates well beyond the reach of local people hoping to get onto the housing ladder, and there appears to be no proposal for social housing or badly needed accommodation for the elderly. Being on the outskirts of town, the development would encourage car use at a time when the council has declared a climate emergency. It would aggravate the congestion and pollution that is already blighting the lives of residents, adding an estimated 26,000 traffic movements a day to our roads. Rather than offering inaccurate and gratuitous insults to ADD and its supporters, Councillor House could better spend his time giving a meaningful response to the 9,000 people and counting who have signed the petition to ask Eastleigh to stop the threat to the St Francis Animal Sanctuary from his misguided local plan. That's from John Lowris, Chairman of Action Against Destructive Development, Bishopstoke Lane, Branbridge, Eastleigh.
Simon Lever writes, worsening problem of graffiti. Sir, this year I've noticed that graffiti has become widespread throughout Winchester. From Badger Farm towards the railway bridge over to St Cross Road, the Hospital of St Cross and Water Meadows, almost every litter bin, sign, post, the railway bridge all the way through to and past St Catherine's Hill have been vandalised with graffiti, often in the same shape. Indeed, it is widespread throughout the area. Graffiti attracts more graffiti. As with the swastika, which represents the most chilling and inhumane period in modern history, graffiti reflects the deterioration of standards and attitudes. More often than not, the location is littered with empty cans and wrappers, demonstrating a total ignorance and pride of the city and environs. I'm grateful for Network Rail that have acted immediately to remove this obscene swastika graffiti. The perpetrator would certainly be aware of its meaning and uncivilised significance. As stated above, the graffiti epidemic has only been obvious this year. Graffiti lowers the civilised nature of Winchester, and its removal should be a matter of priority. That was written by Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And this is a letter from Jane Harding, headed Safe Cycling. Sir, I completely agree with Sally Winterbourne that all bicycles should be fitted with bells, and proper ding-a-ling bells, not just a tiny ping. Letters, November the 28th. Most Lycra cyclists say they just call out rather than adding weight to the bicycle with a bell. But this is not good enough in a noisy street, or for somebody with earphones. Nor can it be used to warn people not to step off into the road from our narrow pavements. Cycling down Kingsgate Street daily, I always use my bell, and if people leap back looking grumpy, I smile apologetically and say, "Sorry, I didn't want to run you over." I strongly feel that all bicycles should also be fitted with lights. My lights are rechargeable, so batteries are not involved. And on a grey day, I use them all the time, in the same way that cars now do. Can you imagine cars being allowed on the streets without lights or a horn? Of course, the danger would be eased enormously if the road planners tried cycling round all our city streets. They would learn that the numerous potholes at the edges are lethal and mean that a cyclist must swerve out into the paths of vehicles in order to avoid them. It would also be helpful to know whether on a shared cycle path, pedestrians walk or cyclists ride, on the right or the left. It is currently not clear. And that's from Jane Harding, Back Street, St Cross.
Continuing the cycling theme is this letter from Glyn Llewellyn. Sir, I hope fellow cyclists will respond to the call by Ms. Winterbourne, Chronicle Letters, November the 28th, for more care and consideration when sharing tracks with walkers. I am grateful for the improved cycle routes in our area, but also aware of the dangers where these are shared with pedestrians. Some cyclists seem to underestimate the speed differential between themselves and walkers and do not allow for the silence of a bike when approaching from the rear. The danger is particularly acute on tracks which are part of long-distance routes, where I have observed groups of cyclists on a long-distance trip riding at speeds only fit for an open road. They should always be aware that an adult on a bike doing 20 miles an hour can do terrific damage to a pedestrian. As to Ms. Winterbourne's call for more use of bells, I do realise from experience that the use of a sudden loud bell behind a walker can cause alarm and sometimes offence. One solution is to mount a jingle bell on the bike. This produces a less alarming sound as it approaches. Some of these bells were given out at one of the cycling promotion events in Winchester last year, and I have found one an excellent way of politely alerting people to my approach. I encourage all cyclists to try something similar. You might avoid a nasty accident and even enjoy music. So writes Glyn Llewellyn, Marston Gate, Winchester.
And now another letter on a similar sort of subject, but this time is headed Potholes, and it's written by Nick Ray. Sir, will oft bicycle sporting Conservative Steve Bryan MP now redouble his efforts in Winchester to fill the potholes after his leader, Boris Johnson's recent promise to do this, presumably during a quiet moment once Brexit is done? Or, like the promises of Brexit, is this just another lie from the party Mr. Bryan sometimes represents? Steve and his party have had 10 years to manage the relatively conceptually simple process of what one might term hole-filling. Yet he and his party have not done this. Why? And why the sudden promises now? To take the long-standing potential lethal stretch, amongst many others, outside the old El Salvio in Union Street. Dangerous for cars, which could skid by zebra crossing, and life-threatening to dangerous to cyclists, who are forced to either swerve into the fast and busy traffic or otherwise risk riding over holes hidden by the rain, potentially coming off as a result either onto concrete or into the road and the path of a car or lorry. And this is not a one-off or an issue just for vehicles. Look at the trip hazards on the high street and elsewhere. It's hardly as if Steve had too much on his hands to address this less than Brexit complex issue, surely. In addition to his taxpayer-funded day job as MP, £80,000 plus expenses, more when sometime Under-Secretary for State for Public Health, Steve has recently found time to represent not one, but two private healthcare lobby groups for an extra £40,000 a year. Perhaps Steve should instead focus on the day job and pick up a spade to help fill the holes rather than dig our country into ever deeper, ever more dangerous ones. Or is this a cunning plan? Perhaps Mr. Bryan wants us all to end up with injuries so that his private health interests may reward him, perhaps on a pay-per-broken-limb basis. Or are there even some things, apart from filling the potholes, that Steve Bryan MP won't do for money? That is by Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And now we have the letters specifically relating to the forthcoming general election.
Yes, you have been warned. Deeply divided, and this is from Mike Biden. Sir, the two major parties dominating British politics have abandoned the centre and are now spinning out to the extremes of right and left. Labour seek the past idealism of socialist state, The Conservatives hark back to the Victorian days of empire and rule by those with wealth and privilege. Both ignore the perils of authoritarian government and past failures of their ideologies. Tolerance, too, is being abandoned. One has a problem with Judaism, the other with Islam, the preoccupations of medieval Europe. They have created deep divisions across our country. Politicians of principle have found themselves either resigning or being expelled by these parties. Some are now fighting valiantly as independents in the hope they can pull politics back to the centre. It's a shame Steve Bryan did not stay true to his instincts and follow them. Instead, he chose a Faustian pact with Johnson and the ERG, no doubt hoping to be rewarded in a new government. He would be better respected if he was standing as an independent. Local voters have a better choice. In Paula Ferguson, they have a candidate of real principle, alarmed at what is happening to our country. Ex-Conservative and Labour MPs, such as Sarah Wollaston, Sam Gaimar, Chuka Umunna and Luciana Berger, have all joined the Liberal Democrats, and voters in Winchester and Chandlersford can join them by voting for a better future than that being offered by either Corbyn or Johnson. And that is from Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill.
Anti-democratic, writes David Lowndes. Sir, the Liberal Democrats have been much derided as anti-democratic in some quarters for their early announcement that if elected to government, they would revoke Article 50. It is time to consider this position in the context of the behaviour of the two main parties. The Conservatives want to get Brexit done, one of the many deceptions embraced by this new breed of Conservative. Any form of Brexit deal will take years to be done, unless, of course, we exit with no deal. It's widely accepted that a no-deal Brexit would be catastrophic for our economy and therefore for our ability to protect ourselves, grow our society and care for the vulnerable. Our standing in the world would reduce. We would be exposed to the vagaries of trade with China and the US and the malign influence of Russia. The current position is that no deal remains a possibility if agreements can't be reached during the transition phase. The Labour position is better because it does offer a second referendum, but the Labour leadership will be neutral. Given their evasiveness to date, this leads to suspicion and leaves them open to the charge of obfuscation. We don't really know their motives. The Liberal Democrats have been unequivocal, and whatever your individual political views, should be respected for their honesty in this, just as they have been honest about their role in Tory austerity. They represent the massive 2016 Remain minority, now majority, in the country. That's from David Lowndes, Heath Road, Soberton.
And Bob Boddy writes on a similar subject. Sir, over the last few weeks, my wife and I have been canvassing for the Liberal Democrats, and we've been surprised to find how many people told us that the Lib Dems are anti-democratic. But I think that lying to the electorate is anti-democratic. In the course of our canvassing, we met so many good and honest people who voted to leave the EU in part because they had been told that we pay £350 million a week into the EU, which is a lie. And this is anti-democratic because we, the electorate, could not fairly evaluate the situation at the time of the referendum and make decisions on the facts as they were presented to us, when the people we should have been able to trust were lying to us. That is written by Bob Boddy, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And this letter from Paul Howell is headed Appalled. Sir, I am totally appalled by the opportunity you've given Steve Bryan to erroneously present himself as supportive of green issues. the Chronicle, November 21st. His parliamentary voting record tells a very different story. Since 2008, out of 15 bills favourable to reducing carbon emissions, he has voted against 13 of them. Out of all Tory MPs, only two others have a worse voting record on the environment than Mr. Brine. With rising sea levels due to global warming, Brine's anti-environment voting record will lead us into the brine. Paul Howell, Romsey Road, West Wenham.
Well, follow that. Alan Parker writes about the will to live. Sir, oh dear, how to lose the will to live. Watch and listen to Jo Swinson Lib Dem for 30 minutes on TV with her well-used phrase, "Yes, we have made mistakes." Sensible/intelligent UK voters of Hampshire should not vote for failure on December the 12th. That brief letter is from Alan Parker, Better Week, Close Week, Winchester.
OK. The next letter is written by Norman Wood and it's headed Reasons to Go. This is an open letter to Paula Ferguson. Hopefully the Lib Dems have remembered the clear result of the 2016 EU referendum and are considering revoking Article 50. But you still want to remain. I list seven reasons why the UK should leave. Perhaps you could publish seven reasons to remain. The annual UK trade deficit with the EU is £65 billion. We pay them more than they pay us. Annual financial accounts of the EU have not been approved for years. Would you pay into this organisation? But UK will continue to pay an annual membership fee of £13.2 billion after rebates, etc., an annual net of £6.6 billion. Unemployment in the EU is around 7.5%, nearly twice the UK at around 3.9%, and the EU youth rate is worse. Immigration from the EU is uncontrolled. Manufacturing is 80% of the EU economy, with services 20%. The UK is 80% services and 20% manufacturing. The EU is the wrong market for the UK to be tightly tied into. The unelected Brussels Commission is responsible for negotiating trade agreements for the UK, as stated by Juncker in a BBC interview. The EU is one of the largest protection groups in the world, as it has to protect individual countries' economies. These tariffs are then applied to all 28 countries, regardless of whether each needs that protection. EU public accountability to UK citizens is far removed, as the UK Parliament, Commission and Council of Ministers is why above our elected Westminster representatives and our MEPs are a tiny voice in the large EU Parliament. In the Council of Ministers, nearly all the decisions are by majority voting, so UK is not able to stop anything on its own. It is one of 28 countries' votes. UK would need to get 14 other countries to agree with it to achieve anything. And that is written by Norman Wood, Loxlane, Sparsholt.
And this is from Leslie McKinnon and is headed Green Ideas. Sir, at the Winchester Climate Hustlings on Monday, November the 25th, Sir David King, former UK government's chief scientific advisor, made it clear that we have to decarbonise our economy rapidly within the next 10 years. This is to have any certainty of keeping to a 1.5 degree centigrade temperature rise globally. Even this rise will continue to present our society and environment with extreme weather and conservation challenges. If Mr. Brine respects Sir David as quoted in the Hampshire Chronicle, and regards him as a legend, and was sorry to have missed seeing him, then I would have expected much more from his plans to transform our society than he indicated at the Alsford hustlings on Thursday, November the 29th. Yes, he did mention hopes of millions of jobs created within clean industries, but where was his depth of understanding of the absolute emergency we face? Where are his ideas for increasing clean, affordable public transport, for the phasing out of carbon fuels and phasing in of 100% renewable energy sources, for home insulation, for the transformation of our agriculture and the improvement of biodiversity, both within the countryside and our urban spaces? Sir David made it clear that the government should bring forward the 2050 target for net zero carbon emissions, that 2050 is far too late. The Conservative manifesto has one page on tackling the climate emergency. I would say that this is a paltry contribution to the gravest threat to mankind and to all life on this amazing planet that we have ever faced. I would ask Mr. Brine to consult Sir David on the means to decarbonise our society and in that way offer his constituents some real leadership and hope. Leslie MacKinnon, Downs Road, South Wanston.
Mrs. D. M. Lever writes about a flood of paper. Sir, another day, and yet another bundle of Lib Dem letters, leaflets, newspapers. Unbelievable. How can the Lib Dems talk about the climate when it seems as if a forest of trees is being slaughtered to promote the Lib Dem cause? That's from Mrs. D. M. Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Oh, sorry. Yes. And another letter, please. Oh, this is from Mark Rowe and is headed canvassing. So, we have on our door no canvassers. I even have on our door who we vote and stand for. Yet our signs are ignored. When I deliver leaflets for my party, the leaflets for the English Democrats, I make note of door numbers and addresses if they say on the door no canvassers or no leaflets, please. Why is it our party can do this, but the Liberal Democrats and Conservatives take no notice? Even now we are getting Conservative and Liberal Democrats leaflets addressed to our home, like many in the Royal Mail from the Conservatives and Liberals. I today phoned both parties. One party was helpful, the other not. I urge anyone who does not want the party leaflets to post them back to the political party's address on the leaflet of which is at the bottom of any leaflet. I clearly say now to Steve Brine and Paula Ferguson, please sort out your canvassers. Make sure voters are not pestered or you will lose the respect of voters. And that is from Mark Rowe, English Democrats, Volunteer Party Chairman, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Adrian Brophy, who is a volunteer for Paula Ferguson, the Lib Dem general election candidate, and it is headed by Stealth. Sir, all the electioneering and leaflets can prove overwhelming, but those of us campaigning feverishly during this election are at least working hard to tell people why our candidate should be trusted with your vote. That's why it's baffling that the Conservatives are choosing to try and walk this election in by stealth. We are seeing a near absence of Conservative posters or leaflets around the city. Meanwhile, on the national stage, Boris Johnson is seeking to escape scrutiny on TV debates and virtually hid his own manifesto launch. Surely we are being taken for granted when the party that has shaped the state of the nation for 9 years is trying to win by pretending to be invisible. And that's from Adrian Brophy, Oliver's Battery Road, North Stanmore, Winchester.
Well, by this time next week, it will all be over. Or maybe it will all just be beginning, anyway.
Beginning again.
That will presumably go down in history, but for some reason, we don't have any historical items this week. I don't know whether they got lost in the paper or they just decided to put so many letters in. So we now move on straight on to Chronicle comment, which will be followed then by First Person.
And the editorial comment this week is entitled, Help a Charity Which Has Helped Many. They are the words no one wants to hear. I'm sorry, but you have cancer. And yet more than 360,000 people in the UK hear this or something similar every single year. Of course, not all cancers are life-threatening, but the impact on those who are diagnosed with cancer can still be mentally devastating. For four decades, the Wessex Cancer Trust has supported those in the area with cancer in their thousands every year. Now the charity has itself been diagnosed as being in poor health. An increase in demand for its services, mixed with a huge reduction in the donations in people's wills and a reduction in sales at its high street shops, means the charity is now the one in need of support. Bosses say they need to raise £600,000 by the end of January, or the charity could close. Raising such a large amount of cash will take determination, but it will also take the support of others, much like the support the charity has provided to many thousands of cancer patients and their families over its 40-year history.
Joanna Lewis writes, People make the difference. Maybe it's because I've been listening to a lot of Michael Bublé recently, but in my world, it's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas. Well, it's not like me. I mean, usually at this time of year, I'm moaning about it. I'm still bearing a bar humbug grudge after spotting tinsel on display in August. Or I'm fuming about a display of Christmas lights in November. Or I go into a very non-seasonal red zone when I hear a particular Christmas song on the radio. A Fairy Tale in New York, Kirsty MacColl with a Toothless Pogue, makes me want to throw something at the radio. Well, who decided that listening to a rowing married couple trading alcohol-fuelled insults will make anyone look forward to Christmas? Well, that's too real. We want fantasy. We want talking reindeer. We want flying snowmen. And above all, we want to believe that an overweight, middle-aged man offering free presents while bouncing a child on his knee isn't a paedophile. But this year, bring it on. There's magic in the air, and I'm advent calendar prepared. We live in unsettling, fractious times. We're facing a future that often looks terrifying, so it's not surprising we may be seeking some intense seasonal refuge. We crave the comfort of old-fashioned traditions, the memories of innocence, and the simple pleasures money cannot buy. So, when does Christmas officially start for you? Well, it's a question I've been asking friends. The Salvation Army advert? Your first sprout? A panic attack in the multi-storey car park? For women, it's usually 8 weeks in advance as they begin organising what feels like a military campaign. For men, it ranges from 2 days before the 25th to the night before the 25th. Oh, only joking, especially all single dads out there, and one in particular. Another question I've been asking is, what's the worst Christmas present you've ever received? Well, for me, it was about 20 years ago. My then boyfriend's aunt proudly handed me a shiny package. It felt promising. However, it contained 6 miniature hotel shampoos and conditioners they've saved from a weekend in the Lake District. Well, that's not your only present, she said, winking, giving me another bag. You've guessed it. 2 shower caps and the shoe shine. Thankfully, no one does Christmas like Winchester, as pronounced by my font of all wisdom and good sense, ITV Meridian newsreader Shanjita Babra, taking time out to enjoy the high street last Sunday as the sun went down, it was easy to agree. Aren't we lucky? The sound of carols from a brass band, the lazy meander through historic streets and past eclectic stalls, a nip into the cathedral to say a little prayer for Mum and Dad. Oh, please still put a cheque in my card. And finally, the Christmas market, where the only antidote to the 360-degree exposure to sheds of unbridled tat is to throw yourself into a vat of mulled wine. But it's not just the commercial side or the decor that Winchester excels in, for it is people that makes Christmas special. Win Christmas! This is how a TV competition is enticing its viewers to enter. But you can't win Christmas, because it's people who make the seasonal difference. Amongst us, hundreds of people are volunteering to make Christmas special, from putting up communal decorations to helping the vulnerable, the lonely or homeless. Thousands will be working on frontline care over the holidays. This week, I popped into one of the council's dementia care homes, St John's Moorside, to visit an old friend. If you're feeling sorry for yourself and dreading Christmas, do the same. The care and kindness shown daily to people in the most advanced phase of this cruelty is always inspiring. But to see staff going the extra mile, organising a visit to the Pilgrim School Choir, was extremely touching. So, fill your Christmas with love and song. Oh, and remember, you can never have too much to buble.
I think we'll all say amen to that. That was a very nice thought. No specific what's on, apart from, which you must be obvious, what is on.
Christmas.
The election, anyway. Lighting up times. Sunrise is around 5 to 8 in the mornings and sunset is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have any problems with your recording that you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And now we move on to items of general news interest.
Woman honoured for work with charity. An Alsford woman who's shone a light on life-saving stem cell transplant after being diagnosed with leukaemia has been celebrated for her work. Joanna Calder was honoured by blood cancer charity Anthony Noland at an awards ceremony held at the Tower of London on Thursday last week. She took home the Patient Champion of the Year Award at an Anthony Noland Supporter Awards 2019 after her life was saved by the charity. Joanna's award was presented in recognition of her passionate advocacy of post-transplant care, knowing firsthand what the effects of living with leukaemia and receiving a life-saving stem cell transplant can be. When you are struggling to stay alive, your physical needs become the focus, Joanna explained. But after transplant, when you've been removed from your dear ones for so long, living in isolation, you are grateful to be alive but can feel very alone. I believe passionately that there needs to be more emotional support for patients and families, and I hoped I could make a difference. Doing this work has given me a sense of worth and self-belief. Leukemia can take your identity. I could no longer work as a nurse and felt incredibly vulnerable. I now feel a sense of purpose and can help others and have a voice. And Joanna has been the face of several of the charity's campaigns over the last year, most recently being photographed by world-famous photographer Rankin for the organisation's Silent Thank You campaign. She is also a vital member of Anthony Nolan's Patients and Families panel, helping to provide information for people before, during and after a stem cell transplant. Along sitting on the post-transplant care expert steering group, using her own experience to champion patient needs. On winning the award, Joanna said, "I'm humbled and speechless. It has been a genuine privilege to be involved with Anthony Nolan, with such a fun, happy, dedicated and uplifting group of people." Joanna is relaunching her career as a nurse in January and is encouraging others to join Anthony Nolan's stem cell register. "You're a potential lifesaver, so step up and do it." Henny Braund, chief executive of Anthony Nolan, said, "Joanna is a hugely deserving winner of this award. Her incredible support and passion for our work is a fantastic example of our charity, which is built on making life-saving connections. It was lovely to meet Joanna, and I continue to find myself inspired and humbled by the dedication and strength of supporters like her."
Labour members donate to food bank. Winchester Labour Party has donated over £500 worth of food and other essential items to Winchester Basics Food Bank. The groceries have been donated by local party members. George Baker, Winchester and Chandos Ford's Labour parliamentary candidate, said, "This generous donation from all members shows that the Labour Party in Winchester has not forgotten those who are living through the worst excesses of austerity and are daily suffering food poverty." As well as food items, the donation included disposable nappies, non-bio washing tablets, Christmas puddings and other seasonal food. The Highcliffe-based food bank operation will ensure that this donation will reach many people in need.
Next item is headed Silent Killer. The Bobby Scheme is tackling a silent killer by launching a funding campaign to fit carbon monoxide alarms in the homes of vulnerable and elderly people across the region. As temperatures drop and heating is switched on, people may not be aware that their lives are in danger. According to the National Carbon Dioxide Be Alarmed campaign, which raises awareness of the dangers of carbon dioxide, more than 50 people a year die from carbon monoxide poisoning, with another 4,000 requiring hospital treatment. A poisonous gas with no smell or taste, carbon monoxide can be produced by any fossil fuel burning device, from gas cookers to wood burners. Breathing carbon dioxide can leave victims feeling very ill, or if exposed to it over a long period or at high levels, it can kill. To be safe, a detector should be fitted within 3 metres of each device, so every household needs a number of them positioned around the home. The Bobby Scheme plans to install 280 carbon monoxide detectors across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight over the winter period at a cost of £3,500. However, with around 40% of homes nationwide without a CO2 detector, the Bobby Scheme is calling on local businesses to help fund more of the life-saving devices. Bobby Scheme fitter Stephen O'Halloran visits homes to give safety advice and fit CO2 detectors for those who need them. "We should all have detectors near any device we burn fuel in," he said. "In my view, having a carbon dioxide detector is just as important as a smoke detector."
City Market hailed as among best in Europe. Winchester Cathedral's Christmas Market is in the running to be named the best in Europe. The City Affair has been shortlisted as one of Europe's top 20 Christmas markets by European Best Destinations. Winchester Cathedral's Christmas Market is often acclaimed as one of the best around, with over 100 chalets to explore. Visitors travel from far and wide to soak up the bustling, festive atmosphere in the historic Inner Close, with spectacular views of Winchester Cathedral. Inspired by traditional German Christmas markets, the Christmas market offers tempting seasonal treats, exclusive Christmas gifts, and a stunning ice rink for visitors to enjoy. Last year, Winchester Cathedral Christmas Market was voted second best in the UK in a Booking.com poll, while the New York Post hailed Winchester as one of the most magical Christmas cities in Europe.
Fewer jobs lost than expected. The job losses experienced at a major employer in Winchester were to a lesser extent than originally thought. Last month, Simply Health announced that following discussions with employees, a number had left their positions. And now the provider of health, dental and pet health plans have confirmed that 27 employees from the city office were made redundant. It was originally thought that 195 members of staff would be let go overall, but following a reorganisation of teams, this was reduced to 139. In Andover, 88 workers were made redundant, along with 24 field-based employees. Richard Gillies, Chief Operating Officer at Simply Health, said, "Following the recent reorganisation of our business, we are pleased to share that we have significantly reduced the expected number of redundancies across Simply Health from a proposed 195 to 139. Our human resources team and leaders have worked closely with our colleagues who were at risk of redundancy to find alternative opportunities for them wherever possible, and so reduce the final number of people leaving us. We're continuing to invest and develop our talent at Simply Health to ensure we meet the future healthcare needs of our customers. Through this investment and our new business model, we have a number of exciting roles."
Before I read the next one, I need to apologise for an error that I made in reading my last piece. Those of you who know much more about these things than I do will have realised that CO2, which is what I said, of course is carbon dioxide, and we were talking about carbon monoxide. I do humbly apologise for my error. And The title of the next piece is called City Turns Red and White for Hospices. Hundreds of people pounded the streets of Winchester for the city's annual Centre Fun Run, which returned for its 11th year. The main shopping area became a sea of red and white as runners from across the Hampshire turned out in a bid to raise up to £40,000 for two of the county's hospices, Naomi House and Jack's Place. People in their centre suits set off from the Broadway before making their way past King Alfred's statue and some of the city's other landmarks. After sprinting to the finish line in the high street, they were greeted by Christmas music, mince pies and a medal, with the jolly running event getting even the grumpiest of Grinches into the festive spirit. It costs £11,000 to run a full service from the hospices each day, including Christmas Day, and the money raised will help continue the organisation's vital work supporting children and young adults.
Clubs' anger over Holmes plan. A chairman of a fishing club has hit out at plans to build 55 homes in Test Valley. Chairman of Eastleigh and District Angling Club, David Banks, claims the plans will be a nightmare for anglers, who would see increased traffic congestion in Stoneham Lane, Eastleigh. He fears the three-storey block of flats at Stoneham Lakes will increase light pollution for anglers at night. The plans by Highwood Homes would sit in the old mansion site behind Stoneham Lakes, if given the green light by Test Valley Borough Council. If approved, there would also be 149 parking spaces. Mr. Banks, 67, from Bitton, said, "We were told about 7 years ago there was a development of 12 high-quality homes and on this understanding we sold a small bit of land to Highwood. Now they are looking to build blocks of flats and houses. They tried to put an application in for 66 homes, which was rejected about a month ago. If we have 55 houses with hundreds of cars coming down the road, it will be horrendous. The road is not big enough to fit so many people, and some days we have 80 anglers going to the lakes at all hours.
Air Ambulance Festive Appeal. The county's air ambulances calling on supporters in their community to give life, not socks, this Christmas. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, otherwise known as HIOWAA, has launched a new campaign to get people thinking about the presents they give. Last December, HIOWAA responded to 140 call-outs, including four on Christmas Day. This year, the life-saving charity is suggesting that everybody resists the temptation to buy novelty socks for their friends and loved ones and instead donate the money to help keep the air ambulance flying and saving lives. HIOWAA Director of Fundraising, Rachel Lehman, said, "We don't stop for Christmas or New Year, for our teams of or doctors, paramedics, pilots and dispatch assistants, it will be business as usual over the holiday period. We depend upon your donations, and by giving the gift of life this Christmas, you are allowing us to be there for our community should the worst happen. Supporters can give the gift of life this Christmas by donating through the charity website, which is www.hiowaa.org/Christmas. I'll read that once more. www.hiowaa.org/Christmas. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance receives no government funding and relies entirely on the generosity of the public to raise the £15,000 a day needed to keep their service operational.
The next item is headed Christmas presents. A Hampshire church and charity is ensuring that some of the county's children who might not otherwise receive a gift will wake up to presents on Christmas Day. The Salvation Army is encouraging local people to add an extra toy to their shopping list so that families struggling to buy a gift for their children can make sure there is something for them to open on Christmas Day. Major Gregory Morgan, the Salvation Army's divisional leader in Southern Division, which covers Hampshire, said, "During the festive season, when many are enjoying celebrations with family and friends, others are struggling to make ends meet. The Christmas story inspires us to reach out to those in need. So we're running the Christmas present appeal to ensure every child gets a present. It's wonderful to see children's faces light up when they open their Christmas presents. And if you have children, grandchildren or children you support, think of what they might like in their Christmas stocking and consider buying an extra present and donating it to the Salvation Army's Christmas present appeal. We're asking for brand new toys or gifts so the families we support feel extra special. And our team of volunteers deliver your generous Christmas gifts to those who might otherwise go without. Residents are invited to donate a new, unused and unwrapped toy for a child aged 0 to 16 years old to the Salvation Army at centres across the county, including the Winchester branch in Parchment Street."
Pedal Power for Children in Need. Staff, residents plus their families and friends, raised an impressive £200 from their static bike ride for children in need. Staff and residents of Westacre Nursing Home in Winchester, along with their families and friends, had a little more exercise than usual when they all took part in the ride. The cyclists aimed to cover 50 miles in 5 hours, with each rider pedalling for 10 minutes at a time. Throughout the day, the cycling team at West Westacre Nursing Home was joined by a host of visitors and supporters, including the Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, who was first to take to the saddle, and pupils from St Peter's Catholic Primary School. Diana Hearn, manager of Westacre, said, "Everyone took part in the cycling with great enthusiasm. Even several of our residents managed to cycle, which was a great achievement. And we had wonderful support from the local community. Thanks to everyone's efforts and the generosity of sponsors and donors, we've raised a marvellous amount for children in need. Although I don't think we're any threat to GB's Olympic cycling team yet." Westacre provides residential and respite care for 50 older people with physical needs and all types of dementia. Diana added, "Raising money for children in need was something our staff and residents really wanted to do. We all had a brilliant day."
Historical railings cannot be repaired after crash. A hit-and-run driver has destroyed a small piece of Winchester heritage. The driver smashed into Victorian railings on Magdalen Hill in Winchester at around 4:10 a.m. on Saturday, November the 23rd. Despite police inquiries, he or she has yet to be apprehended. The force of the impact was such that it snapped the railing post in two and hurled the upper part and the railings some 5 yards up the path to St Giles Hill. The post had been made in late Victorian times at the Winchester Foundry that then stood in the Brooks area. The post and railings survived the cull of public railings at the start of World War II. A Winchester City Council spokesperson said, "Council staff have been on site to assess the damage caused by this incident and have now made the area safe with temporary barriers. Sadly, the Victorian railings appear to be beyond repair, and we will now be working to provide a replacement that's in keeping with the original."
Television host joins incinerator battle. Chris Tarrant has joined the campaigners who have slammed plans to build a monstrous industrial incinerator in an idyllic beauty spot where he enjoys trout fishing. Comes after planning officers at Test Valley Borough Council revealed that they would recommend that councillors reject proposals to build a gigantic plant in Barton Stacey. The former quiz show host and keen angler is a regular visitor to Test Valley, which has an international reputation for salmon and trout fishing. Mr Tarrant has blasted proposals by US firm Wheelabrator to construct the industrial plant in the heart of Picturesque Valley. The former Who Wants to Be a Millionaire host, 73, has called for the scheme to be scrapped. He said, "I had thought, with the whole world at last beginning to wake up, albeit a little too late, to the need to protect our environment for future generations, that hideous ideas like plonking this monstrous incinerator in one of the most beautiful valleys in Britain were surely now just a thing of the past. This cannot happen, and it mustn't." Campaigners claim the area faces being destroyed by the waste incinerator, which is so large it could house two Winchester cathedrals inside it. It is also feared the hideous industrial plant, which Wheelabrator hoped to use to burn 500,000 tons of household waste yearly, will pollute the atmosphere and cause traffic chaos. The proposed facility is 185 metres long, 70 metres high and 46 metres wide. Sorry, I've got that wrong. 85 metres long, 70 metres wide and 46 metres high. Protest signs have been put up as part of the campaign, which is supported by a former advisor to David Cameron when he was Prime Minister, and ex-Formula One drivers Jody Schlechter and Jonathan Palmer, who live locally. The Formula One driver-turned businessman, Mr Palmer, who runs six circuits, including Brands Hatch, lives in Long Parish and said the plans were absolutely outrageous. Mr. Palmer, 63, said, "I can't believe anyone who has had the audacity to build something which would look like a whopping in an industrial area in the middle of the beautiful countryside. This project has arisen because this company can see an opportunity and clearly don't care about putting an ugly, monstrous building in the country."
National chain to take over city centre restaurant. Pizza fans will be delighted to hear that a new chain is opening its doors in Winchester, replacing a highly regarded restaurant. Papa John's will replace the former Mano Thai at the Casson Block in St George's Street after the restaurant closed suddenly last month. Work has now got underway, with changes already taking place for the pizza giant to move into the premises. The new unit is just shy of 500 feet away from one of the company's main rivals, Domino's, on Upper Brook Street. It's not known when the store will open or how many jobs will be created.
Festival expansion bid to go before committee. Festival organisers are facing opposition from residents in Alresford over plans to expand their music event. Alresford Music Festival Limited want to extend next year's affair to allow the festival to run over 2 days, with extended hours for live and recorded music and alcohol sales. However, the plans have been met with outrage by some nearby residents, who fear it will become more of a public nuisance in the usually quiet town. And on Friday, the application will go before Winchester City Council's Licensing Committee to determine whether the event will be able to take place on both Saturday and Sunday. Over the 10 years it has been running the one-day festival, has attracted thousands of people to Albury Park. Festival producer James Mitchell has said to the council that the Sunday would have shorter opening hours and the extra day would allow the event to, quote, reach a larger percentage of the local community, unquote. One opponent to the proposals, Eric Hale of All Close, said it would be, quote, almost unbearable as the music rattles through the house, unquote, and that he already stays away from his home during the festival as he can't get away from it when there. Nearby resident Lynn Atkinson said, "Personally, I find the level of noise so distressing that I go away from home for the weekend. I feel that my home is not my haven, as I can't get away from the noise. Even indoors, the level drowns out conversation and even the TV." And Mr. and Mrs. Ragg of All Close wrote, "Noting the financial contribution made to local organisations, we have reluctantly tolerated the frequently excessive noise levels from the one-day music festival for some years now. But we believe to extend this to 2 days takes little account of the wishes of local residents." While others are calling for the festival to be moved, Jackie and John Frampton added, "The festival should not be allowed to take place in a residential area for even 1 day, let alone two. We urge you to refuse this variation and also to press for a more suitable venue to be found." The plan has also been objected to by Councillor for Alresford and the Itchen Valley, Margot Power, along with County and City Councillor Jackie Porter.
Masterclass for Peter Simmons piano students. Piano students from Peter Simmons College Music Department travelled to London to participate in and observe a masterclass at Steinway Hall and experience a tour of the Steinway workshops with an opportunity to try the Steinway pianos housed there. Accompanied by Sarah Russell, College Principal, and Samantha Carrasco, Head of Keyboard, the three students performed in the masterclass with Charles Owen, Steinway artists, were Hannah Cummonsley, Linda Jones, Jasmine Arnold. Students Archie McCoran, Archie Thornton enjoyed an opportunity to perform Mendelssohn on the Steinway Spirio piano, which recorded their performance and played it back with astonishing accuracy. Commenting on the experience, they said, "It was amazing how realistic the playback is. It follows every tiny movement you have made, including 150 different pedal positions and the depth of touch on every individual key." Student Jacob Hartley added, "It was really interesting to hear how all the materials were chosen so carefully for specific purposes. For example, the wood for the soundboard can't have any knots in it, and it takes 3 years to season." Sam Caresco, head of keyboard at the college, said, "This was a fabulous opportunity for our students to explore the finesse of Steinway pianos and understand the richness and calibre of their tone." Rachel Platt, head of music, added, "I know how much our piano students enjoyed this trip and how it helped expand their knowledge of the range of tone, colours a wonderful piano can produce."
On that harmonious note, we end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.